97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Wiggins America.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Wiggins America.
The only thing I'm going to need from you guys right now is a cup of coffee.
Wiggins.
Today's global economy waits for no man.
America.
Today's global business climate is like,
whatever, dude.
Hey. Politics is a dirty game. I'm not sure we want to play.
There are forces here at work that you couldn't possibly understand.
You have no idea how high up this goes.
Welcome to Wiggins America.
Well, good weekend to you. I normally start with a clip to lead the show off, but I don't have one on this because it's information that's not really being reported on, and that's why I like reporting on it. So welcome to Wiggins America, where we're going to give you all the details of all the stuff, especially in this segment where we are talking about election fraud. I like to talk about this subject because it is so faux pas to talk about it. Well, I guess until now. Now Kathy Griffin and the left on The View will openly question the results of the 2024 election, but you couldn't do that about 2020 because it wasn't their side. It's extremely hypocritical. I was looking at laws coming out of California trying to protect civilians from masked law enforcement, and I thought, well, I kind of agree with that. Like, law enforcement shouldn't be face shielded, covered up, so you don't know who they are, because then how do you ID that they're even law enforcement entirely? But that law is coming out of the left, and the left would instantly change their mind based on the current political situation. And that drives me crazy, that there are those of us who will objectively look at things enough. I mean, I'm not saying there's no bias in anything I look at. I certainly am a person, and I can have bias. But I at least like to acknowledge that there is a sort of higher calling, higher truth to things than just the political moment. And I don't see that a lot from leftist politicians especially. And of course, in this case, back to the point here, when we talk about election fraud, it was not just crickets. It was actively persecuting anybody that would talk about it for 4 years. And now, when they don't like the results of the 2024 election, now it's kind of mainstream and it's okay to question it. And that freaking drives me nuts. But regardless, I'm going to talk about the facts of cases. This one is Mike Lindell. Now, I've been very open about talking about election fraud, having guests on and having people talk about the possibility of this and that. And honestly, over 4 years, we're almost no closer to anything because there's so many angles at which it could have happened. There's so many angles at which it could have happened and didn't. So you always hear about the ones that didn't in 2020 because they were like false flag things even. And then there are also multiple ways in which different states would have approached it. So it's really complicated. And in a very close election like that, it wouldn't have taken much. So I've been very open about talking about it, but also very critical when people out there were getting headlines that were false. And Mike Lindell's been one of those guys. I hate to say it. Those of you who are really hardcore about election fraud in 2020 have got to look at Mike Lindell as somebody who's really ruined this cause. He's been terrible about it. He's dumped a lot of money into it. But here's the story. I'll relate the story. MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell has been ordered to pay $3.2 million to a former employee of a voting machine company, that's Dominion, who sued him for defamation, according to legal woes, adding to the legal woes the prominent election denier faces. A Colorado jury decided the case and amount after Eric Coomer, who formerly worked in security and voting technology strategy for the voting machine company Dominion, filed a lawsuit against Lindell and a host of others who spread false conspiracy theories that upended his life. Coomer's attorneys had originally requested $62.7 million. They ended up with $2.3 million. But that's the story. You know, that's from The Guardian. That's just what you're going to read reported. I've been following this to see what exactly happened in this case, because there's a lot of election questioners that were following this case very closely because Mike Lindell had some money. And Mike Lindell has been putting money into research into this topic about the 2020 election. The trouble is, what it looks like has happened with Lindell And this was true, like, in 2020. I looked into, he did a little documentary that was, like, basically him sitting in a counter with a couple people. It was like watching The Daily Show. So it wasn't a documentary in, like, any sort of serious sense of the word. But it was people, you know, sitting there for an hour and a half, experts, quote unquote, being interviewed by Lindell. And I looked into some of those claims, and they were just bogus. They cited themselves, they cited in circles, and you couldn't really trace anything. And unfortunately, that looks like what's happened to Mike Lindell over the span of these. He's had these symposiums and stuff. Prove me wrong. And people did prove him wrong. And I've had people on the show who won lawsuits against him. What's happened with Lindell is that he has paid a lot of people a lot of money to find what he wants to find. And guess what happens when you pay a lot of people a lot of money to find what you want them to find? They find it for you because they keep getting paid. I.e. climate change. You know, if you pay these people enough money for a long enough time, they're going to find the science to back up what you already want them to find. There's a lot of this kind of stuff. It's not just those industries. It's food. It's anything. You pump enough money into it, pharmaceuticals. People are going to give you the science that you paid for. And that's what's happened with Lindell, is that he's paid a lot of people that are probably pretty smart people, but they know they have to keep producing something for him. And if they want to keep getting paid, and they're getting paid pretty well. And so they did for a long time. They strung him along, and he wasn't good enough at the tech to realize that he was being strung along. And so they went into court with this case in particular, and then they started saying, well, show us the evidence. And all these people he had hired, they didn't really have anything they could really point to. They had hoodwinked him. And so unfortunately, that's that case. Now, before we move on from the topic of election fraud, though, let's also talk about some real things that are happening. The FBI, and this is from Newsweek. I chose Newsweek because I know that this is not a right-wing publication. This is just, like, I'm trying to give you the fullness of the reporting here. FBI Director Kash Patel has declassified and shared documents with senators that he says detail alarming allegations about potential Chinese interference in the 2020 election. Now, Newsweek, because they're not a right-wing publication, they also add in, and, you know, and this also could affect 2024, although there's nothing in this about 2024 at all. It says Patel shared the update on alleged election fraud on a post on X, formerly Twitter, saying that the Chinese Communist Party and potentially others are alleged to have been involved in interfering with the 2020 election outcome, as in choosing the wrong guy illegally. He also said that he has turned over documents to Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley, the chair of the Judiciary Committee, for further review. Specifically, quote, these include allegations of plans from the CCP to manufacture fake driver's licenses and ship them into the United States for the purpose of facilitating fraudulent mail-in ballots. They have tracked at least 20,000 of these. And that is more than the margin of victory in at least two of the three swing states that won the election for Joe Biden in 2020. The allegations, while substantiated, were abruptly recalled and never disclosed to the public when they were found by the FBI at the time. So they found all this to be true, and then they covered it up, the FBI. Now you have a different head of the FBI, so they're finding out more. And it's going to be a while. Like, you got to dig through all this stuff. On Tuesday, Grassley sent a letter to Patel seeking additional records and information related to the document and intelligence information report that originated in the FBI's Albany field office in September of 2020. They knew about this before the election, and we are just now finding out about it. How sad is that? That's your law enforcement at the top levels anyway. So there's a lot more to this, but again, the story is just that. But then as I've been digging into it and finding out, there was at least one whistleblower, maybe a couple, who are coming out and saying that they saw this at the time and us alerted their bosses at the FBI and possibly DOJ that this was happening, and they were told to shut up. One of them looks like he may have been fired over it, although they're not going to say, well, you're fired because of that, you know, so he's got to put the dots together. But this stuff is very real. These are real allegations, and now you have an FBI that's really looking into them, and that's great. What is the outcome of this? Hooey, I don't know. I also have been following DNI Tulsi Gabbard because she, now this is a different, like I said, there's so many different angles at this. She's following something different that actually does have to do with the machines. She is quoted as saying that there is issues that they're looking into right now with the machines in 2020. Now, the machines, depending on what you even mean by machine, because that's different by state, could mean that the counting machine, because, you know, when you fill out a paper ballot, it still goes into a machine. So, are you talking about those? Are you talking about the voting machines themselves that you just press the buttons that people have become very wary of? I don't know. But I do know that there's a lot going on this front, and there's not a lot of reporting on it. So I'm going to keep at it because that's what we've done for 4 years. Stick around. More Wiggins America coming up.
Strap on your diapers, babies, because Wiggy Wiggs riding dirty. Wiggins America.
And now, an excerpt from The Grocery List, a book by Ryan Wiggins.
If you have the kind of hands that show a life of hard labor and cause people to respect you, take my advice. Don't go prancing around shaking them in everyone's faces. Just kind of lay them out in a nice way and let people notice them.
The Grocery List, Food for Thought, by Ryan Wiggins. You're listening to 97.1 FM Talk.
You know, just a commentary here on everything Israel, Iran, Middle East. It's really interesting to me, see if you agree with this, that when two countries start bombing each other, obviously that's very interesting when they go to war. But for some reason, and I think I know the answer to this, but I'm just presenting it to you. When it's in the Middle East, people get really nervous. Much, much more so than a war that starts between Russia and Ukraine, for instance. You know, everybody's talking about that when it started, and I think 22, we're past 3 years going in that war. Unbelievable. But when you talk about Israel, and you talk about Iran, or you talk about Iraq, less so Syria, but Afghanistan to an extent, something about Iran, something about Gaza, Iraq, Israel, when these countries prepare for war and really kind of are at war right now, I don't know how to phrase it other than that they are at war. They're firing missiles at each other, so that's war. But it's not war in the sense that there's, you know, invading troops yet. So it's targeted strikes, but it's constant. It's just interesting to me how much more people pay attention and get nervous about that region. And that's got to be because of, for lack of a better word, sort of the biblical heritage of the region. And I guess we know that, you know, if there's going to be something crazy happening in the world, it might start from there. I don't know. I just present that to you as an interesting like thought experiment, or to see if you agree, or is it just, no, anytime war breaks out, it's interesting and you're going to take notice. And, you know, nobody wants it to happen. But, yeah, let me know. Let me know what you think about that question. Is it more of a focus for the world, for people you know, however you want to approach it, when it's a war breaking out in the Middle East versus if it's a war breaking out really anywhere else? Just curious as to what you think about that. This segment was not intended to be that deep. I can tell you right now that I really was just intending to bring you some movie suggestions. So I'm going to do that. A little bit of a diversion for this weekend. If you're looking for something to watch, I got a great one for you. It was made a couple years ago. If you've already seen it, my apologies. But it's a horror thriller movie, which I have not been in my past really into horror movies. I do love thrillers, though. And I'm finding that I almost am having to dip into horror to get more thriller options, which is a shame because, as I'll show you in just a second, there are so many movies out there. There are so many movies made every year, for years that you and I have never seen before, but we're limited by what we can access right now, kind of by streaming, although you can rent anything, but you got to find out about those movies, which is one of the reasons I bring these things to you. But this one is on Netflix. It's called Barbarian. It is a horror thriller, and it's the classic, you know, you're in a house and something weird about the house. But this one's got a twist. It's an Airbnb. So a woman checks, I won't give away everything, a woman checks into an Airbnb, and there's been a mistake. There's another guy who has also checked into that same Airbnb. But it's late. It's rainy. It's kind of a bad neighborhood. She didn't realize that when she booked it. So she's trying to figure out what to do. Should she go inside with this guy, or should she wait out in her car and try to figure out? Nobody's going to answer the phone. It's just some company. So she's like, okay, I'll come in and get out of the rain and try to figure out how this Airbnb is double booked. That's the basic premise of the movie. And then it devolves from there, and you're constantly asking questions. Who is the guy? What's going on in this house? There seems like there's some weird stuff going on in here. Why is she staying? How long will she stay? Or will she stay at all? Will she get a hotel? That's the premise of the movie. And then the other interesting thing is about halfway through, it just changes. And you're watching something completely different, and you're wondering how it connects. Very, very fun thriller movie. I think it satisfies pretty much on every level. It constantly keeps you guessing, and it doesn't end the way that you'd expect. The characters, you're not sure who's going to make it, right? Who's the good guy and who's the bad guy? Good stuff. It's called Barbarian. It's on Netflix. But now, for a little more In My Lane.
The last.
Where is everybody?
It's not the end of the world.
There's all the time I need and all the time I want.
The last person on Earth.
I miss the noise, you know?
I thought I was going to be alone again.
There's time now.
This is, as I said, another suggestion. Now, this one, I'm not going to tell you, is easy to find. And I think that's kind of the point, is that I don't want to just tell you, hey, this movie's on streaming. You can mostly find that stuff depending on what you subscribe to. But I've got this little hobby that I seek out Last Man on Earth movies. And it's got to hit one of the three criteria I have. A is that you're actually the last person on Earth, or at least think you are, or Earth-like place, because it's not always Earth. The second is you're the last person in the universe, or last capable person around. So there might be other people, but they're all frozen or something like that. You're the only person able to interact with anything. Or criteria C would be that it's an empty city, essentially. It's a place that's otherwise should be populated, but for some mysterious reason, there's nobody there. So that's any of those criteria. It makes my list for Last Man on Earth. And the more it hits, the better it is. Doesn't mean it's a great movie, but the more it hits, the better it is. This one I'm recommending to you is called The Last Witch Hunter. This is kind of a fantasy, but there's some action and sci-fi elements to it. This is a Vin Diesel movie. It was made in 2015. Vin Diesel is immortal in this movie. And he is transported, at least in his consciousness, in one scene, to a future where he's the only person left alive other than this evil other thing that he's fighting, Vine Lady, whatever. He's surprised by the empty city that he arrives in, so that gets the C. And then the A and B are obvious because he's the last person, capable person on Earth. The movie itself is not terribly noteworthy otherwise, but it's an enjoyable movie with weird genre bending elements. It's called The Last Witch Hunter, and it gets a 4 out of 5 for my Last Man on Earth rating. It gets just a 3 out of 5 overall, and that's important too. But hey, love to recommend these things to you. Hopefully you can seek them out. Definitely, Barbarian's easy. If you got Netflix, watch Barbarian, but don't watch it with kids. It's kind of scary at times. Last Witch Hunter, well, that one's up to you. The ICE raids and the deportation from law enforcement that's going on, well, that's facing tremendous pushback from Democrats. I think it's the same 30% of the country that after watching, I refer to this a lot, after watching the debate between Biden and Trump in July of last year, whatever it was, about a year ago, actually, they did a poll after that where Biden couldn't talk. He was a mess. Even Trump, he wasn't even trying to be mean. Trump could have just beat him down and didn't, because he didn't need to. It was so obvious to everybody that even when you watch it afterwards, CNN goes, "Welp, what was that?" You know, we were shocked. Everybody, the whole nation was shocked watching that debate at how bad it was. Even if you knew Biden was already in bad shape. 30% of America polled after that said Biden won. So that indicates a lot when you are refusing to acknowledge what's right in front of you and just believe the lie. You know, whatever fits comfortably for you, you're going to believe that. Well, that's what a lot of these people are doing with the protests, with the ICE raids. They are just saying, well, this is what fits in my head, that Trump is bad. I don't really know what the cause is. I'm just going to protest it. That's why you show up at these protests and you see there's so many signs. There's not really a particular cause. So they're kind of protesting deportations, but they don't really know. It's just that same 30%. It goes, well, Biden won that debate. it gives me a little bit of comfort to know that those people actually are like completely delusional. But anyway, that's the one track. You've been seeing the deportations and that's been getting all the headlines. How about self-deportation? That's been a real initiative from the Trump administration. Let me turn this back here. This is a New York Post article. It says DHS launched a multi-million dollar ad campaign warning immigrants not to enter illegally. That's been extremely effective. I mean, you're talking historic lows of illegal entry right now. Or alternatively, to people who are here illegally to leave voluntarily now and possibly have an opportunity to return and enjoy our freedom and live the American dream. So basically, if you get deported by us, you will never come back. If you deport yourself, you might have a chance to come back and be a part of America. But you got to be legal. You got to do this legally. That rebranding coincided with an offer of financial incentives for illegal aliens who leave voluntarily, a stipend of $1,000. I'm not sure I was a huge fan of this, but if it's working, it's working. That's in lieu of costly physical deportation, which costs taxpayers up to $17,000 per person on average. So how effective has self-deportation been? Well, it's really tough to know because some people are just leaving and you don't really know. You know, they have overstayed their green card or something like that, or their passport, and they just go back. So you don't really know for sure how to count all of them. But one way to track the program is by checking employment numbers. This wouldn't include all of these people. That's why it's an estimate. But one financial whiz cited by the Wall Street Journal calculated a decline in the immigrant population of 773,000 in the first 4 months of Trump Part 2. The Washington Post claims that 1 million foreign-born workers have exited the workforce since March. So that's one way to track it, is to look at the workforce. And if you're looking, let's say it's 1 million. Let's say the Washington Post is right, and it's 1 million people have left who were illegal immigrants. What's amazing is they cite that, and they say that this is a bad thing because it's, in quote unquote, I kid you not, the Post, the Washington Post, quote, a sign of the weakening labor supply. Now, that could be an actual concern. But the fact that we've flooded so many people in so quickly, you're going to see the equal opposite. You know, if you remove them that quickly, it shouldn't have as big of an impact as you'd think, because they haven't ingrained themselves. This isn't DACA, and that's a completely different issue anyway. But they haven't laid roots that are that deep. These are migrant workers, right? So if that many people have left, first of all, then the campaign is very successful. You might be getting the low-hanging fruit, like the people who are going to leave anyway first. You don't know. But it has been successful. That would be, depending on estimates, about a tenth to maybe a 20th of the amount of illegals that have come into the country in the last 4 years. So that's pretty significant. That's not even counting the ICE deportations. So all that to say that it's funny to look at the Post trying to claim that this is a bad thing because of workforce drop, even though the last few months you've seen greater than than expected work or jobs added in America while you're reducing the workforce from illegal immigrants and reducing the government jobs through DOGE. So that means that the workforce that's coming into America right now is people who just want jobs, who are Americans, who maybe they weren't even part of the unemployment statistics for very long. So that's all super positive news. But, you know, we can't just stay positive, can we? Let's do a tale from the dark side.
There is, unseen by most, an underworld. A place that is just as real, but not as brightly lit. A dark side.
Michael Madigan has been sentenced to 7.5 years in prison for corruption convictions. Do you remember Michael Madigan? If you're in Missouri, you might not know the name as well. Illinois, we should. Michael Madigan is the country's longest serving state House leader ever. Served as Speaker of the Illinois House from 1983, that's shortly after I was born, until 2021, with the exception of 2 years. Along the way, he developed a reputation as an all-powerful political wizard who wielded vast influence over laws affecting nearly every aspect of life in the state. This is from the Chicago Sun-Times. Now, the reason that this is a tale from the dark side is not because justice is being served. That's the positive part. The negative is that he's 7.5 years in prison. I mean, you just heard it right there. Wielded vast influence over laws affecting nearly every aspect of life in the state. The dude was corrupt to the core, and he's getting 7.5 years in prison for corruption. Well, it's because they were only able to connect him to one thing. But he was in all kinds of stuff. So it's a mixed bag, right? It is a conviction. They did catch him. He is going to jail. He's been out of the house now for 3 years and involved in these trials and all this. And now he's actually going to go to jail. So that's the positive. The negative is that it's 7.5 years. Now, he's pretty old, so that might be a life sentence for him. But still, you're just like, dude, this was a lot of corruption. And you have definitely affected the state for more than 7.5 years. And now you're getting 7.5 years in prison? Seems like it should have been a little longer to me. But I guess you still take the fact that justice is served. But I did frame it as a tale from the dark side just because I like playing the open.
Hey, everybody. A lot of people are going to be saying happy Juneteenth. It should not be a federal holiday, and I'm on my way to work. Have a good day.
Ooh, Charlie Kirk, you sure you want to go there? I guess we do. That's why I played it. I wouldn't have played it if I wasn't going to go there. Juneteenth. A couple things to say about Juneteenth. First of all, totally will take the day off. I'm not going to be a hypocrite on that. I took the day off on Thursday, and I was glad to do so. And I will continue to be glad to do so. Despite Donald Trump saying too many non-working holidays in America, it is costing our country billions of dollars to keep all of these businesses closed. The workers don't want it either. That's not true. The workers like it. Soon, we'll end up having a holiday for every once working day of the year, is the way he worded it. It must change if we are going to make America great again. So people are saying, Donald Trump, you're a racist. You want to get rid of Juneteenth because you are a racist. It doesn't really have anything to do with keeping money in the country. And it is true that anytime, you know, you take a holiday, that means less business is generated, less tax revenue is generated overall. It costs the country a lot of money to not work. See COVID. We shut the country down. See how that turns out. It's a much smaller scale, of course, but that's the argument that he's making. I will make a different argument here. It's not the exact same as Charlie Kirk's. I'll get to his in a second. But I'm going to say something here that you already know this is true. And I'm going to say it, and you're going to go, yeah, I never maybe you have, but maybe you never put words to it, but you'll hear this and go, that's it. That's the thing right there. Juneteenth is a real holiday and should be celebrated in Texas. In fact, I had never heard of this holiday. I had maybe heard the word before until 2020, when basically all of America found out what Juneteenth was. Not that nobody knew what it was, but the majority of people I know have never heard of Juneteenth until 2020. And that is because awful, evil people, the left, politicians mainly, and influencers, co-opted Juneteenth for their own political purposes. You already know this because you have lived through it in very, very recent history. This is why there's a collective groan on this holiday, not because of what it's actually celebrating, but because it was co-opted by evil people to not bring America together, which is what Juneteenth should be. It should be a celebration. If you're going to make it a federal holiday, which really it's just a Texas holiday because it happened in Texas and they've been celebrating it. But if you're going to make it a national holiday, it needs to be something that is patriotic and celebratory of coming through something and being united again. So getting rid of the classes of America, the classes based on race in this instance, is slavery, and bringing us together for equality. But that's the exact opposite of what the people who've made it a federal holiday intended. They intended to make this a wedge to drive between people. You see, they didn't want to highlight Juneteenth to celebrate the end of slavery. They want to highlight Juneteenth to make you focus more on slavery. They want to make you aware of the injustices more and more and more and more and more, even the farther and farther and farther we get from those things. They do not want to unite. They're using it to divide. They want to spotlight slavery. They want to almost celebrate it, you could say. They do not want to celebrate its end. They want to keep bringing it up. And you know this. You know this because you can feel it, but you've never really been able to put words to it. And if you go, Ryan, you're just saying something that's in your gut and assuming it's in my gut. Yeah, I am. And I don't really have to prove it, but I will. Do you know how Juneteenth was celebrated up until 2020 in Texas? It was celebrated with a lot of fanfare. It actually looked a lot like 4th of July. In Texas, people would celebrate it, mostly Black Americans, little parades, festivals, little things around. It was community driven and it was very patriotic. And the colors showed it. What colors do I mean? Red, white, and blue. That was the colors of Juneteenth up until 2020. Now, when it became a federal holiday by evil people seeking to co-opt it for their own purposes, now it is an African holiday. If you want to see the difference, look at materials created. There weren't as many of them pre-2020, but look at stuff that was sold around Juneteenth pre-2020. It was red, white, and blue, with star-spangled hats and things like that, mostly. After that, everything you see, I mean, I just went to the bank this morning and saw this. The Cardinals posted something about this. It's all African colors. It's browns, reds, golds, and greens. That is to highlight differences rather than to bring us together. So you had Donald Trump making the economic argument for it. Charlie Kirk, which I opened the segment with, said, remember, this is a quote, remember, the holiday being observed today is not simply Juneteenth. The official name of this holiday, as declared in the 54-word bill Congress passed to create this holiday in 2021, is, quote, Juneteenth National Independence Day. It's a bizarre name. The original Juneteenth had nothing to do with national independence. It was about the emancipation of slaves in Texas, or specifically finding out that they had been emancipated way too late. I added that. Back to the quoting it. The real reason is it's called that because our real Independence Day is just 2 weeks later. The goal of Juneteenth holiday is to displace the unifying importance of the July 4th holiday and to replace America's racist founding with one that places DEI and left-wing race politics at the center of our national myth. That is why Turning Point will never observe this holiday. America has one Independence Day for all Americans. It's July 4th and always will be. And now this.
Wow, Wiggins America.
I'm going to play for you a clip here from Representative Kevin Kelly. Have you ever heard that name before? That's fine. I've never heard of him before either. He's in the House. He's from California. He's part of a California delegation sending a letter to Attorney General Pam Bondi. Now, based on those things, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to play for you the clip, and I want you to tell me which party he's from.
During the COVID era, we saw fraud unlike we had ever seen when $32 billion in unemployment benefits were purloined from fraudsters, international criminal syndicates who are easily able to defraud Gavin Newsom's unemployment department.
Ah, there it is. He's criticizing Gavin Newsom. It gave it away. So he's a Republican. What he's finding, though, is interesting. So that's the setup. Here is what he and other California House Republicans are finding.
And now, the latest example that we've learned is that over a third of community college applications in the state were fraudulent. These were not real people, not real students actually seeking a spot at one of our community colleges. What they were instead were scams, were individuals who were trying and succeeding in committing financial aid fraud, siphoning more than $10 million in federal funds and millions more in state aid, according to the California Community Chancellor's own office. So we have asked the Attorney General and the Secretary of Education to look into this matter and see why California has not been able to stop this from happening. We know that with respect to the EDD fraud in the COVID era, the governor's office failed to take the basic common sense steps that other states took, that the federal government had advised.
Why would the state of California, why would the governor of California not want to cross-check any of these fraudulent applications for COVID, for now this is college financial aid fraud that's happening? Why would you not want to stop that? It's almost as if you're fine with the fraud. It's almost as if you're complicit in the fraud, that you want the fraud to be happening. A third, listen to this, if you missed it from listening to that whole clip, there's a lot going on there, because he's talking about COVID, but really the new thing that he's found there is that one third of all financial aid applications for college in California are fake or fraudulent, and most of them are getting funded. So there is a third of everybody applying for college aid in California that is completely fraudulent. And what is California doing about it? Nothing. So California Republic, like, this should not be a partisan issue. Why does it take just Republicans doing it for it to become an issue? Like, why is it now, oh, Republicans are in office, you have a Republican DOJ, now something might get done about it.
Get more at 971talk.com.